It's a pleasure to be talking to right now a man that I've known for several years. We started out together at the now defunct Classic Now television show on ESPN Classic. Along the way, he gave me my start in the blogging universe at Nomas, where you can find them at www.nomas-nyc.com. Millions of Nomas readers know him as Large. I know him as Lars. Other people out there just simply know him as David Larzelier. He is the man that knows more about the world of boxing than anyone I know. I'd like to welcome Lars to JerryPark.com. How's it going, Lars?
Good, man. Good. Great to be on the show.
So we wanted to invite you on here because so much has been going down in the boxing world as of late. And, you know, a lot of people have been talking about the quote-unquote demise of boxing, but the last few weeks have produced some of the best fights of the year. So let's get right to it. First off, Taylor Pavlik won. You were actually in attendance of that fight in Atlantic City. First off, give us the overall impression of the fight and whether this fight ranks as match of the year for 2007.
Well, I mean, to give you a sense of the impression of the fight, I was there with my colleague at Nomas, Chris Eisenberg, and we walked out of that fight, both of us on quite a high, asking each other if what we just seen ranked amongst the greatest sporting events we'd ever attended. So that was the impression that we had. I mean, it was a true rocky atmosphere in that house. You had a lot of Youngstown representatives there. For those of you who didn't see the fight, Pavlik got caught in a windmill from Taylor in the second round and ended up on the canvas and then really barely made it out of the second round, came back to win it by knockout. I mean, it was incredibly exciting. Was it the fight of the year? I would say, because of the import of the fight, I mean, you're talking about the unified middleweight championship. It's not the unified title, but it's the recognized, you know, ring lineal middleweight championship there. And, to have a guy come back from the condition that Pavlik was in the second round and win it by knockout, I'd say it was. The only other contender is another fight I was actually at, which was Cotto Judah. And I'd say that this fight was just a little more significant than that one. So, yeah, I'd say it, right now it is the fight of the year.
And we'll get to Miguel Cotto in just a second. But back to Kelly Pavlik. How marketable is he for the world of boxing? Here's this young guy who some people kind of viewed as an underdog. You actually picked him to win the fight. Nevertheless, a little bit of a shock. Do you think he can actually be that sort of, you know, knight in shining armor for the sport of boxing, where the world can kind of get behind and see this kid who looks unassuming but yet has a powerful punch?
I think he's going to be a big star. Yeah. Number one, I think he's going to be a big star because I think he's the real deal. I think he's a very, very good fighter. And he's proven now, two fights in a row. I mean, before he fought Jermaine Taylor, he fought Edison Miranda, who is a killer. I mean, I think Edison Miranda hit him harder than Jermaine did. Jermaine just kind of caught him unawares. You know, it's always the one you don't see that. But Edison Miranda hit Kelly Pavlik with some ungodly shots. And Pavlik just hung in there and took him. He's got a hell of a chin. He's an assassin with that right hand. I mean, he throws a 1-2 like nobody I've seen since Larry Holmes. So I think he's got the real skills. I think he's going to be a champ at 160 for a while. And then marketing-wise, you know, he's got the great Rocky story. And he's very, there's something about the guy that's very genuine. You know, he comes from Youngstown, so he's got the Boom Boom Mancini pedigree. I don't think he's going to be a gigantic star. You know, I don't think we're talking about Tyson. I don't think we're talking, oh, he's going to save boxing. But I do think that he's got crossover potential, meaning, you know, that I could certainly see him moving out of just the kind of small fraternity of boxing fans and into a wider recognition just because of how great his story is and the whole Rocky thing. People love to get on that bandwagon with boxing. And so he's going to get hit a lot when he fights. You know, it's not going to be the first time that he gets knocked down, that Jermaine knocked him down. And people love to see that guy that can come back. So I think he's going to be a big star, no doubt about it.
Now, we've yet to hear where both fighters go from here. There's a lot of talk that Lou DiBella and Bob Arum are having a hard time signing the rematch for this. And either camp might not want to have the rematch as their next fight for the fighters. There's been talk of Pavlik possibly fighting John Duddy and Taylor going in a different direction. What have you been hearing as far as Taylor Pavlik too? Is that going to be their next respective fight, or should we be waiting for this in a couple of years down the line?
I think it's on right now. Taylor Pavlik too. That's the word. There was a consensus for a while there that each of them was going to take an interim fight. I can't believe that Kelly Pavlik would fight John Duddy, who's another tough SOB, you know, before he would get the Jermaine money for that rematch. I think that'd be a crazy thing for him to do. But the reports now is that the fight is made for sometime in February and that they're just dotting the I's. Strange thing about the fight is that, and this was in the rematch clause, is that it's going to be fought at 166 and that it's not going to be a title fight. That's what everybody's saying. Lou DiBella has confirmed that. I had a guy write into me on Nomas the other day and asked me what that was all about. What I sense is that it was in the rematch clause for Jermaine, because it's been rumored for a while now that Jermaine can't make 160 anymore, that he practically has to kill himself to do it. Now, we all know Jermaine doesn't love to train. So, and he's a big kid. You know, I think Jermaine could, I got to believe that he could walk around comfortably at 190. I think he could fight at 175 and still be a very, you know, decent size 175. So I would imagine that 166 catch weight was in the rematch clause because Jermaine thought he was going to win, and because he thought if he had to fight him again, he said, look, I don't want to do this 160 shit anymore. So I think that now that they're doing it, even though Jermaine lost, it gives me a sense that it's because I have a sense that the 166 catchweight is because Jermaine thinks he's going to have a little bit more of an advantage over Pavlik in the rematch if he fights a little bigger weight. And that may be true. I think that 6 extra pounds will give Jermaine a little bit of an edge because he can carry the weight more naturally. I still think he's going to get knocked out. But yeah, so it does look like it's going to be their next fight. I think it'll be a big fight. I think it'll be a pay-per-view fight. That's exciting for Pavlik, for sure.
Now, call me old school or whatever, but I still love the titles. I still love what they represent. And to me, I kind of feel as though the match loses a little bit of its luster when it's not for the title. I know they've agreed to this or whatever, but is there any chance that they would possibly revise this? Or are you hearing that, you know, because of the issues you just talked about, Taylor not making weight, that it's going to be a non-title fight, and at the same time, fans will still flock to see this rematch, even if it were for the title?
I doubt they'll revise it, because it's coming from Jermaine, and obviously he's the one who's on the spot now. You know, it was in the original rematch clause. So when they made the original contract for the fight, there was an automatic rematch clause that either fighter could Jermaine could exercise. And within that, it also stipulated that if they did fight a rematch, that it would be at 166. And so I don't know for a fact that it's because of Jermaine's troubles making weight. That's what I suspect is the reason that it was in there. Obviously, I doubt that Pavlik would care if they threw it out the window, you know, for the rematch. So if they're sticking to that for the rematch, it must be coming from Jermaine. And you would presume that it would be Jermaine who would want to throw it out because the belts are at stake. Having been at the Pavlik Taylor, if I was there with the guy who edits Round One magazine, and I remember him saying, we were talking about a potential rematch, and he turned to me and he said, boy, I don't know if Jermaine wants any more of that. And I kind of have the same feeling. You watch that fight again, Jermaine took a pounding in there. I was right on the walkway when the fighters came in and out, and he walked past us and he was beaten up. He was walking like a drunk coming out of the pub, man. He was in bad shape. Kelly Pavlik is a tough, tough kid. I think that Jermaine, I don't see any way that he's going to beat him. You know, nothing I saw that night in the ring led me to think that Jermaine could go back to the drawing board and find a way to win. So I think he's looking for any edge that he can. and that 6 pounds is a part of that. I still think the fans will want to see the fight, because at this point I understand what you're coming, where you're coming from, and I'd prefer if it was a title fight too. But at this point, I think most people have lost track of the belts and don't really care. And I think they'll still get the attention, because the first fight was a great fight. You know, it was a bloody, you know, ultra-violent affair, and that's what people dig in fights. So I think they'll still get the, I still think that they'll get the big numbers for the rematch.
All right, well, let's move to another title fight, the one that's actually coming up. It's involving the super middleweights, and it's actually on November 3rd. Joe Calzaghe, 43-0, hasn't lost since October 1997. He's actually five fights away from Joe Luce's record of 23 straight title defenses. Now, he's going up with against a guy named Mikel Kessler in Cardiff, super middleweight unification bout. And this fight's kind of flying under the radar with all the big fights coming up, with the Cotto fight, the Taylor fight we just passed. We also got Mayweather-Hatton coming up. How are you thinking this fight's going to go? Calzaghe, Kessler in Cardiff, November 3rd.
Well, I'm excited for it. I think it's going to be a good fight. I like watching Calzaghe. I think to an American audience, you think of one fight when you think of Joe Calzaghe. You think of the way that he just utterly pants Jeff Lacy a couple years ago. Jeff Lacy had the Olympic pedigree, you know, had the super muscular looking body, looked like Tyson. They called him Left Hook Lacy. He was knocking a lot of people out. He was a heavy favorite. He went over to England to fight Calzaghe, and Calzaghe, boy, I'll tell you, it was not quite the type of embarrassing beating that Floyd dished out to Gotti, but it was in the same class of beating. It was an embarrassing night for Jeff Lacy, and it made you think that Calzaghe, who to that point I think most Americans didn't know who he was, first of all, and second of all, I think they would have doubted his talent based on his resume. That made a believer of a lot of people. I think to boxing insiders now, they're still not quite convinced, because their feeling at the time was that Lacy was overrated to begin with, you know. So, yeah, Calzaghe beat the crap out of him, but he beat the crap out of an overrated fighter. That fight has some bearing on Calzaghe Kessler, because Kessler's a little more skilled on the whole than Calzaghe, but he sets up very well for a southpaw boxer like the Welshman. You know, he comes right ahead, you know, he doesn't have much of a defense. He's rugged. He'll take a lot of shots. I see Calzaghe winning in a decision, but don't be surprised if Kessler manages to earn a stoppage. I think right now, I think the gambling odds are about even, and I think there's good reason for that. Calzaghe is a much bigger name than Kessler, but people know that he's very tough. He's got knockout power, and there's a potential for excitement there. If I had to bet, I'd bet on Calzaghe in the decision.
Sorry about that. Sticking in the super middleweight division, you knew I had to bring this guy up, Lucien Bute from my hometown of Montreal. This past Friday, captured the IBF super middleweight title. I know he's kind of small time and a little bit regional, but he seems to be building some momentum, and there are talks of him, you know, getting in there and facing some of the big dogs. First off, I want to get your impressions on Lucien Bute, and if he can kind of channel, you know, a little Montreal flavor from Arturo Gatti and be the next hometown boy. Is he just too regional? Does he have a chance to move up against some of these guys like Calzaghe, Kessler, or, like I said, just a guy that will do well in local shows and nothing more?
Well, you know, he's got a real belt now. That's the IBF belt. So it's got to be it's the belt that Calzaghe won from Lacy and then dropped. I can't remember. It's so complicated to remember how they go, but I think it's the belt that Calzaghe dropped so he could fight Peter Manfredo. That's the IBF belt. I've seen Lucien Bute, whatever you call him. I'm not tremendously impressed. But I think he's got something. He certainly punches. He holds his hands strangely. Doesn't throw very many straight punches. Doesn't move that well. I certainly think, here's the way I feel. I feel like if Kessler beats Calzaghe, I could see Kessler fighting him. I can't see Calzaghe fighting him. Just because I don't see what he would stand to gain from it. I mean, Calzaghe's starting to move into the territory where he's talking Bernard Hopkins. He's older. He wants a couple of big fights, you know, and he's not going to get it from Lucien Boot. But Kessler, I could see, if Kessler beats Calzaghe, I could see that fight getting made. And I got to be honest, I think Kessler would kill him. I think Kessler's a very good fighter. I don't think he's quite in that class. But, you know, it'd certainly be exciting for him. I think that's his chance at a big fight at 168.
All right, well, not exactly the ringing endorsement from Lars for the Frenchman, but I knew I was going to
But you know,
you.
He's Romanian, right? Isn't
yeah,
he Romanian?
He's actually originally, but, you know, as a Canadian.
He's a fake Montrealer.
There are no real Canadians out there, you know, so we take what we can get.
That's true.
Let's move on to a fight that I'm sure you're going to have a lot to say about. And you spoke about Miguel Cotto just recently. You were at his last title defense against Zab Judah just a few months ago. And now he will be back in Madison Square Garden on November 10th facing Sugar Shane Mosley. First, let's talk about Mosley. And it seems as though, unless he's fighting Vernon Forrest or Winky Wright, Mosley's going to give you the fight of his life. And a lot of people, I feel, are kind of sleeping on him right now. And Cotto's this kind of, you know, truck going through and taking everyone down by storm. But I have a feeling that Mosley might be shocking the world here. Do you agree with me, or is he kind of on the downside of his career right now? 5 wins in a row, so, you know, you can't deny that.
I would say... No, and he looked great in his last fight. So I would say no, he's not on the downside of his career. Or I mean, he probably is, but he's still got a lot left in the tank. Let's put it that way. But I disagree with you because I'm such an advocate of Cotto. I do think that Cotto is going to win the fight. The way I think of it is this: is what do you think? What do you think happens in a Sugar Shane Zab Judah fight? You know, to me, that's a pretty even fight. I probably like Sugar Shane to win it, but I think it'd be pretty close. And Zab gave Cotto a hell of a fight, particularly early in the round. I just think that Cotto is a terrifying fighter. And I don't think that Sugar Shane has the power. I've seen a lot of Cotto fights up close and personal, and the guy takes a hell of a punch, you know. I don't think Sugar Shane has the power to make much of an impact on him. And I think that if he did, and maybe a younger, maybe Sugar Shane 2002 would be a different story. But right now, I feel like Cotto will have no problem walking through Sugar Shane's arsenal, and you know, I think you'll see a very similar trajectory as you did in the Judah fight, where Sugar Shane had some good early rounds, looked good with the pitter-pat combinations, but you know, slowly but surely, Cotto will get in there and start digging those hooks into the rib cage, and by the 9th or 10th, I think you'll see a stoppage. Cotto is. Everybody that fights that guy comes out looking like they got hit by a truck. You know, I mean, he is really a scary fighter. And I'd be very surprised. The only way that I see Shane winning is if he really stays away from him. And even that, as we've seen with the judges, can backfire. But I really think that he would really have to get on the bicycle and try and put on a boxing exhibition. And maybe he could eke out a decision that way, but I don't think, you know, right now he's not the guy that the judges are going to be in love with anyway. I feel like if he does that, you'd see a kind of reactionary, you know, Tito Trinidad, Oscar De La Hoya decision where they give it to Cotto anyway. So, and that's not really, you know, I don't want to take anything away from Shane Mosley. That's not his style. You know, he's not, that's not the type of fighter he is. He moves well, but he doesn't hide from people. And when you're not hiding from Miguel Cotto, you're taking a hell of a lot of punishment in there. I see him getting stomped. I think it'll be a fun fight to watch. So, hey, I mean, you know, if it wasn't for the Pavlik Taylor thing, Judah Cotto is hands down the fight of the year right now. And I think it'll be a fight of the year candidate. I think it's going to be exciting.
I can't agree with that. And if Cotto actually does defeat Mosley, as you're predicting, where does he go from there? I mean, there hasn't really been a lot of talks about who his next fight would be against. What are you thinking right now?
I think that the winner of this fight has got to be next on the Floyd bandwagon. You know, I think this fight, this Sugar Shane doesn't stand anything to gain star-wise in this fight, but he certainly does stand a lot to gain reputation-wise. And believe me, if he beats Cotto, I will really be impressed. Cotto, this fight is kind of, you know, he's been slowly but surely making his star in the boxing world. This fight is the fight that I feel like kicks him up into the next level, and into the level where I think that Floyd will be willing to make a fight with him, because the money will be there. I mean, Floyd's all about that money. I don't think that Floyd is going to fight Cotto until the money is there, because, to be honest, I think Cotto's the only guy out there who could beat him. I'm very interested in a Cotto-Floyd fight. I feel like that's the best fight right now in all of boxing. It's the true, you know, Matador Bull Ali Frazier matchup that is out there, and I wouldn't know how to handicap that fight. So that's what I'm kind of hoping for. If Sugar Shane gets a win, I think that he'll be on Floyd's radar screen as well. I think Floyd would be a lot happier to fight Shane Mosley than he will be to fight Cotto.
Well, before Floyd can actually even start thinking about trying to set something up with Miguel Cotto, he has a pretty big fight on his hands. I mean, not one that a lot of people are expecting him to lose, but still, December 8th against Ricky Hatton. Does Hatton have any chance of dethroning Pretty Boy Floyd?
No. I would say no. I mean, of course, everybody's got a puncher's chance, but I feel as close to certain about Floyd winning that fight as I can feel going into a fight. I just don't see. The amazing thing, I mean, I think anybody who knows boxing looks at that fight and sort of shakes their head, because the amazing thing is that, you know, it's a welterweight fight. It's a 147 fight. Ricky Hatton, you know, tried to make a big splash. His first big fight in the U.S. They're going to make him a star. He's got this big deal with HBO, and he fights Luis Collazo, who, you know, I want to give him a plug, is a Star City kid, you know, Brooklyn kid, tough kid. Guy that Shane Mosley just beat easily, you know, handpicked, I think, for Hatton to be the kind of guy who would give him a good fight, but would also get hit a lot and give everybody, you know, be a big celebratory Hatton victory. I mean, I thought he won a gift. Hatton won a gift decision in that fight. A lot of people thought he lost. I thought it was at least a draw. And the main thing that, you know, that we all learned in that fight was that Ricky Hatton is not a 147. He's not a very big guy. He himself learned that. You know, he went running right back down to 140. And on the other hand, you got Floyd Mayweather, who just beat, you know, one of the best fighters in the world at 154 and had no problem doing it. You know, had no problem getting his weight there. I mean, Floyd is one of those rare fighters for whom, you know, I feel like Floyd, if he had to right now, could get down to 135 and beat somebody, beat Pacquiao. You know, the weight differentials don't seem to mean anything to him. But in this particular fight, not only is he going to be the faster fighter, because he's always the faster fighter, but he's going to be the bigger fighter too. I just don't see what is there that Ricky Hatton's ever done that leads you, or who has he beaten other than an over the hill Costa Zoo that leads you to believe that there's a single thing he's going to be able to achieve in the ring. I see him getting knocked out, you know, not a one punch knockout, but a Floyd type of knockout where it's just like, you know, a knockout by attrition sometimes, seventh, eighth round. I don't think he has a chance.
We're talking with Lars from nomas-nyc.com, and if you want to hear the latest on any type of boxing story analysis, it's the best over there. You definitely need to check it out, as well as Classic Sports and a great line of T-shirts. I'm actually sporting one right now, the Dallas Strawberry one. It's the stuff is amazing over there, so you definitely need to check it out, nomas-nyc.com. And Lars, stay with me for a second here, all right? Lennox Lewis, you know, he goes and films Ocean's 11, fights Haseem Rahman, gets his ass whooped. In MMA, UFC, Chuck Liddell, you see him on Entourage, you're seeing him on all these movies, fights Quentin Jackson, gets his ass whooped. I just saw Floyd Mayweather on Dancing with the Stars for the last couple of weeks. Is there any chance that his mind is not focused on this fight? I know he's off the show, and I know he's had probably 2 months now between...
Did you watch any of that crap?
No, I didn't. I can honestly say that I didn't. I swear. But
I watched some of it to write about it for Nomas. It was pretty ridiculous.
But is it possible that, you know, he's kind of taking this fight lightly, and for the same reasons that you just spoke of Patton really doesn't have the credentials to be in there with a guy like him? Can we see a Rahman Lewis type of upset?
Well, I mean, you kind of feel that way. You kind of wonder with Floyd, when is it going to catch up to him? I mean, you wonder, is Buster Douglas out there waiting for him somewhere? On the other hand, the kid is really superhuman. You know, all reports from his training camp is that he's one of the most, you never see him get tired. I've never seen him get tired in the ring once, you know. I've never really seen him have a hard time in the ring, other in the second Castillo fight. Other than that, he never even seems sort of winded or troubled in any way. He spars like sometimes like 15 consecutive 4-minute rounds with 30-second breaks. He's in unbelievable physical condition, and anybody who's ever seen him skip rope can attest to that. I guess I'm coming off like a Floyd fan. I'm not, you know, his personality, whatever. But as a physical specimen, as an athlete, he's kind of superhuman. Everybody wondered about Dancing with the Stars. I mean, Christ, he's got this big fight coming up, and he's on this stupid show. Evidently, after he would tape the show, he would go and run 7 miles and train all night. I would imagine that eventually it's going to catch up to Floyd, how chaotic his life is, all the crap with his uncle and his father. But it doesn't seem to have yet. There's no signs of it yet. And so I just don't think Ricky Hatton is the guy that's going to do it. In my mind, Miguel Cotto is going to do it. And you would presume that if he's going to get in the ring with Cotto, that he's going to have all of his focus on Cotto. I just don't see what Ricky Hatton's not really a very hard puncher. You know, he's not really that. He throws a lot of punches, but he's not really that fast. You know, he fights in a style that Floyd is going to have no problem. I mean, you know, Floyd's also such a brilliant tactician in the ring, an instinctive tactician in the ring. So I just think you got a man fighting a boy in this one. But I don't Dancing with the Stars or no Dancing with the Stars, I don't think it matters with Floyd.
And, you know, you bring up this interesting point about his family and the whole soap opera wrestling-like storyline with his uncle and his father, and we hadn't heard about that in a while, and I'm presuming we are about to hear a lot about it with the upcoming Mayweather-Hatton 24/7 show on HBO. What have you been hearing with the dynamic of his relationship with his father and uncle? Who's going to be in his corner? Is it pretty much status quo from the De La Hoya fight?
I think it's status quo. You know, I haven't read too much about it. I don't know too much about what's going on right now, but I'm sure, you know, they're going to do the 24/7 again for this fight. And I'm sure that, you know, as soon as the cameras start rolling, Floyd Sr., We'll try and get in front of him somehow. But I think his camp is pretty stable, and I think De La Hoya Mayweather 24/7 kind of belied that fact. You know, I think it was TV. It was great TV, but I think in fact his training camp is pretty stable. I think that Roger trains him. He's got Leonard Ellerby there with him. And that's his brain trust. And Floyd Senior now I know is handling some other fighters, and so he's kind of out of the mix. I'm sure when that show gets rolling again, he'll show up again. But I don't think it'll Floyd. I don't think it'll affect Floyd very much.
Now I want to move on to Trinidad Jones coming up, and if you're listening and you think we're jumping around here, we kind of are. This is kind of an overview of the boxing scene, but we'll have Lars on every week to break down the upcoming fights for the week coming up. But Jones Trinidad, and I'm pretty sure I read this on Nomas, and correct me if I'm wrong, when they were interviewed just a couple of weeks ago on HBO, it seemed as though none of them even cared about the fight coming up. These two guys kind of going through the motions and, you know, kind of riding off into the sunset while collecting a check. Does anyone actually care to see these two guys fight each other?
Well, I mean, I don't. It's hard for me to gauge. You know, boxing is a star-driven universe. All sports are, obviously, but boxing much more so because there's no league per se. So the big names really matter. You know, who you can get in the house. It's entertainment. And those are two of the biggest names of the 90s that you could come up with: Roy Jones and Felix Trinidad. So. Now, I'm sure they'll get an audience for it. I mean, I think it's HBO pay-per-view, and I'm sure some people will buy the fight. I did write a piece for Nomas about it. I just mentioned it while I was writing about the Juan Diaz, Julio Diaz fight. They before that fight, Larry Merchant had Tito on one side of him and Roy Jones on the other, and he was interviewing. You know, Tito doesn't speak any English. So that was understandable. But Roy Jones, I mean, Roy Jones is just a space cadet. Who the hell, who knows what's going through that guy's head, you know? And Larry's asking him questions about his decision, and Roy's always talking about the Lord and how the Lord has led him to this and led him to that. But Roy just talks about boxing now with such an utter lack of conviction, and the same way that he fights, you know, I mean, ever since Tarver knocked him out, he's really never been too committed to boxing other than getting a paycheck. And I definitely felt in that interview, I could imagine an HBO producer watching it and thinking, Roy, could you just try to pretend that you gave a crap, you know, because this couldn't have been too much clearer that Roy was just making some money. Tito, he had an interpreter, and he was just toting the party line. Oh, Roy Jones is a great fighter, but I think I have what it takes to knock him out. I mean, you know, I don't know. I'll tell you, the last time neither of these guys, you know, I mean, Roy has fought since Tarver knocked him out. Obviously, there was a third fight for that. But to me, it's just frozen in my mind, Tarver knocking him out and then Glenn Cuff Johnson knocking him out. And the goggle-eyed look that Roy gets on his face when he gets knocked out, and when Glenn Johnson knocked him out, he was out for like 3 minutes. And then also frozen in my mind, and this is Tito's last fight, is the fight with Winky Wright, which was just, boy, Winky just made a fool of him in the ring that night. And he looked so slow, and so... I don't know what you're going to see in there, and I can't say that I care very much. It's true. I mean, who cares who wins? So Roy Jones, Felix Trinidad. It's like seeing the Rolling Stones in concert at this point. You know, it's like, yeah, there they are. You know, those guys. They used to be great. Now they're doing that. Who knows? Maybe it'll make some money. Probably make some money.
You bring up this interesting point about, you know, the two guys, they kind of equal each other out because they're these two old acts that people remember them in the 90s, and they were great and they produced some of the greatest moments in boxing history. And now here they are clearly at the end of their careers, just kind of going at it in a fight that, again, no one really cares about. Would you rather then see a guy like Roy Jones or Felix Trinidad fight a young and up-and-comer, you know, try to maybe create a star in that way, and maybe if he does beat the up-and-comer, he can also kind of, you know, polish off his star once again and maybe have one last run in the sun? here when they're fighting each other, both old guys, fighters that clearly, you know, don't really generate much interest from the boxing audience, they really don't have that chance to rejuvenate themselves. You see what I'm saying? Would you rather them go in that
direction? Oh, of course. Would I rather them go in that direction? I mean, you know, it's a case by case basis. I mean, what you're talking about is basically what Shane Mosley did. You know, I mean, Shane Mosley never thought he was ready for the revival tour. You know, he couldn't solve Winky Wright, and you know, many a fighter has been posed with that problem. And you know, somebody like Shane, you know, and obviously he had the losses to Vernon Forrest as well. You know, at that point, a lot of people were ready to give up on him, but he wasn't ready to give up, and so he went out. He fought. I remember he fought David Estrada. You know, he fought some young, real fighters. You know, and then the Vargas Shane Mosley fights were a little on the line of a Roy Tito Trinidad, but not quite that bad. And then he fought Collazo. You know, Shane Mosley was trying to get back in the game. I think more what you can gather from the fact that these two guys are fighting each other is that they're not really trying to get back in the game. Roy Jones. You know, Roy Jones' his career has had a startling, kind of trajectory of parabola. He went up, and he occupied a unique place as pound for pound king. He navigated a bunch of different weight classes, but then, boy, once he slowed down enough that somebody could catch him and punch him, Roy discovered something about Roy, which is that Roy doesn't like to get hit very much, and he doesn't take it very well either. I mean, when nobody gets knocked out like Roy Jones, when he gets knocked out. And so I don't think Roy really wants to fight anymore. I don't know what to make about the rumors that they almost, before Hopkins fought Tarver, evidently they almost had a fight between Roy and Hopkins. That would be a little more of a real fight, because Hopkins is still kind of a viable commodity despite his age. But more my sense with Roy is that he just wants to make the money, but he wants, first and foremost on Roy's mind, is safety. He doesn't want to get hurt. And so he's fighting somebody who's old and slow like Tito Trinidad, who hasn't fought in, well, I can't remember when the Trinidad-Wright fight was, 2005 maybe, you know, And because it's two big names, you know, they're going to get a paycheck. Obviously it'd be more exciting if Tito was coming back and he was like, you know, I'm going to fight Edson Miranda, you know. But it's just, you know, I think that we can almost be grateful that he's not, because I really don't think Tito has anything left at all, you know. So this is a revival show. It might as well be an exhibition. You know, I mean, what the heck? Sampras is going to play Federer in an exhibition. You know, and I'd like to see it. You know, it's not competition. It's not the Wimbledon. It's not, you know, center court at Wimbledon. But it's exciting to see him out there. It's a little less exciting to see Roy Jones fight Felix Trinidad, but it's something. You know.
I want to finish off talking about the heavyweight division, and despite the fact that it's clearly fallen on hard times, it still kind of holds this place in everyone's heart as the crown jewel of the boxing divisions. Evander Holyfield, we can clearly close the book on that story. He's done.
I don't think he's closing the book on it, but yeah, I think I closed the book on it a long time ago.
Exactly,
yeah.
At least 5 years ago, and. You know, Vladimir Klitschko is still talking about trying to unify those titles. As in all the divisions in boxing, there are a ton of champions, there are a ton of title holders, but the heavyweight division seems to be that division where we want to have a number one guy. Right now, in your mind, who is the heavyweight champ?
No doubt, it's Klitschko, Vladimir Klitschko. And I think he's earned it. I think nobody, if you read Nomas, nobody has killed Vladimir Klitschko as severely as I have over the years for his, you know, jab and grab style. But I think that under the tutelage of Manny Stewart, Vladimir Klitschko has become a pretty formidable fighter. I saw that when he fought Calvin Brock. And I liked Calvin Brock. And at that point, I was really hoping that Calvin Brock was going to emerge into something exciting. And Klitschko punished Calvin Brock. And then you could see, you know, unlike Jermaine Taylor, who doesn't seem like he is able to learn a thing from Manny Stewart, you know, is hands down the best teacher in the game. Klitschko really seems to be absorbing a lot of Manny Stewart's lesson. And it seems to be like what he says goes. And, you know, he's become like a frightening 1-2 machine, Klitschko. And he's big and he hits hard. And you know what else is getting pretty scary about him is that for a guy that big, his punches are straight and accurate, you know. It kind of, yeah, a little bit of a Kelly Pavlik feel to him. Pavlik has that same sort of, it just seems like this, you know, innate radar for the button on somebody's chin. Klitschko seems like he's developing that. And the guy that size, boy, he's going to be tough to beat. So I'd say he's hands down the heavyweight champ right now. I don't see many people on the horizon that I think could give him a very good fight right now.
That was actually my next question. If anyone is out there that can derail Vladimir Klitschko, his brother was actually planning on coming back until an injury bug kind of stopped that that comeback. Yeah. Although he does say that he does want to eventually come back. I think I heard sometime in early 2008. If Vitaly Klitschko is able to gain some momentum, and for the sake of the whole heavyweight division, do you think there's any chance that they would actually fight each other?
No. They've said that they wouldn't, and I don't think that they would. They're very, very close, and it's a little different than, you know, Serena and Venus Williams, like, you know, hitting a tennis ball around them, and they would be getting in there to beat the crap out of each other. I doubt we'll ever see that. I don't think you're ever going to see Vitaly Klitschko in the ring again. I mean, yeah, he's got another fight made with Moskiev, I think, for February. You know, he's backed out of like six straight fights, you know. I mean, they went on and on with the Rahman thing for like a year. I don't know. Maybe he'll fight again, but I'll believe it when I see it at this point with the old Dr. Iron Fist. I was excited when I heard he was coming back. I thought, oh, that's interesting. But then when he dropped out and it was back again, you know, it's always his back. I thought, oh, this is never going to happen. For Klitschko, yeah, he wants to unify the titles, and he's going to have to figure out who has them first. I think the Russian giant Valuev has one now. Ibrahimov has one. You know, those fights aren't very interesting. I mean, maybe Valuev would be an interesting fight. I mean, people recognize that. I was surprised at the Klitschko Brock fight. I went to that fight. It was at the Garden. I was surprised it still had some juice, and like Dustin Hoffman was there. You know, like people are still interested in a heavyweight championship fight. It's true. Even when it's like some Eastern European guy that they can't pronounce his name, they're still interested. So maybe a fight with Valuev. Valuev is so bizarre to watch fight. You know, maybe that would get some juice going. I'll give a little plug for a Philly fighter, Calvin Brock, who Klitschko fought and beat, is fighting Friday night, this Friday. You got him fighting a Philly fighter named, he's from Pittsburgh, but he fights out of Philly named Fast Eddie Chambers, and he's a heavyweight fighter who's undefeated, and he's one of the guys kind of lurking on the periphery that people are excited. Another Philly fighter, Chaz Witherspoon, who is, of course, the nephew of former heavyweight champion Tim Witherspoon, had a very nice fight on the undercard of Pavlik Taylor. Is another heavyweight, that American heavyweight that people are excited about. You know, I think if you want to get heavyweight boxing rejuvenated in the U.S., you'd have to abolish football. You know, to be a heavyweight boxer these days, you got to be about 250. What kid is really athletically talented enough that he would be a good fighter these days, no matter what his circumstances, you know, inner city, whatever? What kid that's, you know, that's running 6'2", 250 isn't playing football? It's just it's just not there. I mean, you look at it, you look at, like, of the top 10 ring-ranked heavyweights right now, I don't think there's an American on there. Maybe Chris Bird is still on there, but I think they're all, I think you got Sam Peter, obviously a Nigerian, and then you got a bunch of Russians and Eastern Europeans. It's just not a place where we have many American fighters anymore. It's kind of a shame, but yeah, well, check out, I don't know if it's going to be on TV anywhere, but Eddie Chambers fighting Calvin Brock is an interesting fight. Calvin Brock is a good fighter, and that's a big step-up fight for Eddie Chambers. There's been a lot of talk about him, and that'll be a fight where you really see whether he is a legitimate force to be reckoned with or not.
Just another thing for boxing fans out there to look out for. I mean, who said boxing was dead? And the talk of boxing's death has been greatly over-exaggerated. Lars, I want to thank you so much for joining us here on JerryPark.com, and we hope to have you on every single week and strike up a little boxing talk, because, again, people love it, and the last few months and the upcoming few months are just generating a whole host of interesting fights and great action. So I want to thank you very much. Don't forget to check out Lars on Nomas, NOMAS-NYC.com. Great boxing analysis, classic sports. Everything that show Classic Now could have been is on Nomas-NYC.com, as well as all the T-shirts. Amazing stuff. Definitely check it out. Lars, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, man. Let's do it again soon. It's been great to be on.